Hello, welcome to Starts With You podcast with me, Mark Hopkins. And in this episode, I get to speak to the lovely Emma Venables, who I have known since the dawn of time, about 18 years. We were in university together. She was doing one course and I was doing the other. And she does graphic design. Most of the stuff she does is print, or nearly all the stuff she does is print graphic design. So anything from banners and shop fronts and probably mugs and brochures and flyers. She's going to kill me for saying that. But really interesting lady, and an area of graphic design that we overlook as business owners or someone that needs some sort of marketing material in business. And we don't really think about the freelance guys. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to Emma, is to hear about it. Let's find out a little bit about what print graphic design is about. And why it's so important to business today. So I hope you enjoy this podcast, and I'll see you on the other side. Hi, Emma. How are you doing?
Hello. I'm not too bad. Holding up.
Yeah, I know, isn't it? Oh, God. Yeah. What time is everyone getting up these days? it's like a big long
giant... How do you know what day it is?
Yeah, I know. It is... I think it's Thursday. I'm not sure. I'll be honest with you. I woke up on Sunday thinking it was Wednesday for some unknown reason, and I don't know why. But everything's merged into one, isn't it? It's so strange. People are still.
I think the 4-day, like the bank holiday weekend, didn't help as well.
Yeah. I've noticed on LinkedIn as well. People are still working on the weekend. Like before, yeah. No one was working on the weekend. Now, load of people are still doing this thing on the weekend. It's so strange.
Nothing else to do, is there? Everyone's just scrolling social media, sat at home.
Yep.
And I think we're all addicted to it as well, aren't we? It's just
we are.
A constant scroll.
Oh, God. It's the world we're in. So, Emma, tell everyone a little bit about yourself. Who are you? What do you do?
So, I'm Emma Venables, and I am a graphic designer. I've got a freelance graphic design business called Emma Jane Creative, and I specialise in all things design for print. And I've pretty much been doing design since I was tiny. before I knew what the job was, I was sat there. You know, do you remember, when like home computers first came out?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know, like 1994,
five? Yeah.
An old 486 computer.
Oh my God, that was... Yeah, I remember the 486. Yeah, I used to...
Funnily enough, that was the last time I used Windows, because obviously I'm Mac-based, being a designer now. The last Windows product I used was Windows 3.1.
Oh God, alive!
I used to sit there on Microsoft Publisher.
It hasn't come on much since then, by the way, just to let you know. It's still about 4.1-esque.
Yeah, honestly, if you put me in front of a Windows machine, I look completely like your nan or something. Completely...
It's not changed much. It's not changed much.
Yeah, Windows 3.1. But I used to know how to use DOS and all of that jazz.
Yeah, yeah. And they still use DOS to this day. Some computers.
Is that still a thing? I don't...
Yeah, it is. It is. It's still a thing. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
I used to sit there designing on this Microsoft Publisher, like maybe magazines and stuff. But I didn't know there was such a thing as a graphic designer or magazine designer or anything like that. I used to sit there, I called it Star Magazine, and I'd sit there making my own newsletters, I guess.
Oh, wow, that's really sweet.
Yeah, 1994, maybe.
God, that's amazing. A lot of people, I was going to say, not many people know this, but we've known each other for, what, nearly 20 years now?
Oh, it must be. It
must be nearly 20.
2000.
We went to college together, didn't we? That was basically where we started.
Yeah. 2002, I think.
2002. Oh, my God. That's crazy. It was like a different world back then. So,
really? Just inviting me on this podcast, I feel really old.
Yeah, I am old. I'm 41 this year. Thank you for telling me that. what I was going to say then was print graphic design, was that originally kind of the newspaper? Because you were saying you didn't do newspapers when you were younger. Was that originally the graphic design, the newspaper editors? Not editors. Newspaper graphic.
Typesetters.
Yeah, typesetters. That's the word I was looking for.
So obviously, back in the day, they didn't even have computers, did they? So the typesetters would be the guys that actually physically get all the letters. You know, like the old letterpress.
Yeah, letterpress, yeah.
And like line every single, you know, letter up on the newspaper.
Wow.
And you know, you couldn't, there was no Photoshop. It was all like cut out, you know, and stuck on to actual boards.
Yes.
It's crazy. I mean, obviously that's way before my time, but it's definitely evolved over the years.
So that's like, what they would
make my life so much easier.
So that's what they would have been doing then in your profession. Is that?
Yeah.
So that's where
literally cutting and pasting, literally.
And for posters outside of the newspaper world, for posters and stuff like that, you just, my God, I didn't know that. Did you have to, when you were in college then, did you have to learn about that?
No, but I think the college lecturer was a designer in that time.
Wow.
She was particularly au fait with the sort of new digital side of it, the computers.
Yeah.
She was proper old school, you know, that's the way she did it when she was...
Oh, man, that was fun. I remember the old school guys in my college, or just on my apprenticeship even, and they made you do stuff. There's a piece of kit that could do it for you, but they made you do it by hand so you can appreciate it, doing it by hand.
So you
use the machine to do it. Yeah.
You can just do lots of presentation things by hand, you know.
You're kind of thinking, is this kind of your kind of Karate Kid moment where they're making you do the wax on, wax off? And before you know it, you've got the martial arts to do it. do that job. I don't know.
I remember being at school and thinking, right, well, I want to do graphic design. So what GCSE options, what do I want to pick?
Yeah.
I remember design technology. You know, I was like, oh, I really wanted to do textiles or the cooking or something. But no, there was a subject called graphic products.
Okay.
I was like, right, I better do graphic products because, you know, graphic design looks great for uni and everything. Oh, my God, it was not graphic design. The guy made us sand a piece of wood for 2 hours. It was like technical drawings and stuff, more like what you'd probably get in architecture and stuff like this.
Yeah, or design engineering.
Mixing out of a piece of wood. And I just remember a 2-hour block sanding a piece of wood. And I just thought, you know, it's a means to an end, you know, don't let it put you off.
Yeah.
This is not graphic design.
But yeah, what did you build out of that piece of wood?
Oh my God, this is how old this is. I built a pager. It was a model of a pager.
A model of a pager.
A wooden pager that was like designed. Yeah, I know. How ridiculous is that? A pager.
That's crazy.
I guess you've probably got some younger listeners that don't even know what that is.
Yeah, no, they don't. They don't know what it is unless they watched something like Back to the Future. I don't know, actually. What is the equivalent of a pager, Emma? It's a text message on a little box. How many characters did they have? Like 8?
It's like a text message on a Nokia 3210 or something, isn't it?
Well, that's even more advanced than the pager. It's going to be...
Before that.
Yeah, because they only used to put numbers or... My mate used to have them when we were apprentices. And it was about the time mobile phones were coming out, the pay-as-you-go ones, and the Sagem and the first kind of... Like
yeah,
mobile
GSM
phones.
Phone,
GSM, cool. Yeah. And they had, like, text message you had to push the A button 3 times for C and...
Yeah,
but just like the year just before that, he had a pager, and when his mum used to call him, they used to have number codes. But his mum had to phone up an operator to tell the operator what code she wanted to send to him. So because we didn't have mobile phones, you know, we were living in a 20-man room in the Air Force, and all you could hear in the night was when this thing was buzzing, and then he would walk about half a mile down the road to the nearest payphone. To phone his members.
Oh, you wonder how we live, don't you? Like,
how did we live back then, with 486s?
Did anyone change anything?
I was thinking about this the other day. I was saying this to my, I think it was my mum was on the phone about this lockdown. And I said, can you imagine if this lockdown happened in the 90s, in the early 90s? We would fucking killed ourselves by now. we would, honestly, with this, all we would have had is 4 channels. We couldn't go to the video shop. And some people did have VCRs, some people didn't have VCRs, so it would have been a nightmare. We would have just, my brother was saying the other day, we would just go and play a game of football at the park. We would have just done that. Bugger it. Anyway, we digress, Em. A pager, brilliant. So
technology's made life a lot easier, isn't it? Especially in business.
We could. I don't think we could have done this back then. But with you, so with your kind of, with graphic design, there's so many elements to graphic design. I know you said earlier on to me that you're not a fae with all the other elements of it. You just know your section of it, your part of it. Mm-hmm. But there's web design. That's kind of a part of graphic design, isn't it? And then there's comic books and there's various different versions of this, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, the sort of arts, you've got like your motion graphics, website design, illustrations, like another, you know, it's
books. And,
it's a whole other skill, you know, to be able to illustrate by hand. So I don't really get involved in the illustration side of things. You know, I can do a bit of digital illustration.
Yeah.
So the whole sort of detailed, and what you're saying, like the comic book style, that's a whole other skill set.
That's because I loved art when I was in school, and I used to draw comic books when I was in school and do some painting. I don't know if you've seen any of my paintings on Facebook.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. We're all learning new skills. We've got time, I guess.
But that's exactly it, and it's terrible. but it all blends into one, doesn't it, with graphic design? There's different, you know.
There's a lot of crossover, and I think a lot of people do have, you know, a broad skill set. I mean, I used to know a bit of web design, you know, back when we were at college, at uni. I knew how to basic code. You know, I could open up text edit, write a bit of code, and it would make a nice website.
Yeah.
I did learn it all. It's just, oh God, it's moved on so much.
It has. There's so many different kind of the CSS, HTML. There's so many different kind of codes.
Exactly. And with the sort of advent of the sort of CMS systems, content management, you know, like people want to update their own websites. They don't want to be held hostage to a web designer that's going to charge.
Yeah.
It's just all moved on so much since I learned it. And I just think, you know what, coding does my head in.
That's the point. Yeah, exactly.
I'll just leave it to the people that are good at it, and I'll just deal with my speciality, you know, what I love to do.
That's it. I did my own, a company did my WordPress site, then gave me the keys to it, and then I did my own thing to it. And then I got into trouble because I wasn't using the code, and then he just went in and changed a little tiny code. You don't know that. No one knows that type of level of like, mastery.
Yeah. I can still look at the code to a certain extent and know, you know, I can find out what font somebody's used or something.
Yes.
That sort of thing's useful to me. So if I'm doing someone's print design, and you know, I want it all to be consistent. Consistency is so important in branding.
I agree.
They don't always know what their brand is. You know, they don't know what their fonts are. So I can go into their website, and quite often there'll be a bit of code that tells me. So
Coding's in there, isn't it? Still, in what you do and so forth. So let's talk about your thing then. Let's talk about print design. So what does that consist of then? Where do you start and kind of where do you end? What is your genre complete in that sense?
So in a nutshell, if you can print on it, I can probably design it for you.
All right, okay.
Start. but I mean, if like a startup business was coming to me, I'd absolutely start with the logo and the branding.
Okay.
Start with the branding, go from there. So your logo, your branding is more than just a logo.
Yeah, it is.
So people think, oh, brand, that's my logo, bang, what next? It's about so much more than that, because your brand is the tone of voice that you put across, the emotions you make people feel. It's like every single touch point that people have with your business is your brand, and the whole thing sort of builds a picture as to how people are going to feel about your brand. It's every thing you post on social media, you know, your tone of voice. And then things like colour psychology come into play. I mean, it depends how deep you want to delve, really.
Wow, okay, no, let's talk about this. This is really interesting. So I didn't realise there's so much psychology in this. So when you say, so obviously we know branding is a lot more about how you present yourself, but the logo is what people look at and associate with your branding. Yeah,
yes, it's got to be memorable, but the logo, you can do so much with the colour psychology as well.
This is why I want to ask.
Have you ever noticed how so many big power brands are like red and blue?
I have, actually. There's quite a lot, isn't there?
Red's like a real action colour. It creates like an urgency. This is why you get so many sale banners in red. Urgent, time running out. It creates an excitement and like a power. Blue is like universally like the color of trust and feeling safe, and the color of authority. So it's gonna make people feel like subconsciously like they trust your brand.
My logo's got blue in it. It's also got salmon pink as well.
Kind of a...
It's almost red.
Ready. Yeah,
it's almost red. Red. Yeah. When you say that, I was thinking...
colours without realising.
Yeah. I didn't, honestly. I just picked it. So the guy presented...
The only one.
Christian at SSG presented it to me, and I went, yeah, that's the one. It was just like spot on.
I love clients like you. Yeah. That's brilliant. Yeah, that's the one. Really decisive. Boom, done.
See, whenever I got that, especially with the website design that he did as well and kind of presented it to me, I haven't got a preconception of what it should look like. What I have got is how I should work, if that makes sense, and my methodology of doing something. And then all this, the branding and everything, as long as it looks sensible and it doesn't look stupid, you can work with it. And then, in time you can change it. You don't have to stick with it.
The hardest thing is when someone doesn't have a clue what they want, right? So I know it when I see it. I mean, you could be stabbing in the dark for ages, not knowing what... So, no one expects you to know exactly what you want. Of course not. But if I know that you really hate the colour pink, you really hate, maybe you hate modern-looking fonts and you want something a bit more traditional or, it has to have a starting point. Loose idea.
How do you deal with people like that, then? I'm not, trying to... diss your clients, or do you say to them, I need some sort of visual representation of what you're looking for, or at least give me...
It can be tricky.
Yeah.
Because you get that old chestnut, well, you're the designer,
I get that with recruitment, though. You're the recruiter, you find that person for me. Yeah, but what do you want? What do you want them
you
to do?
You need the requirements, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You need the requirements. So it helps to have, I've got, a branding questionnaire that I'll send out. So I try and drill it down at least to, who is their target audience?
Yeah.
Who are they targeting? Who do they want to attract?
Ah. Do they give you a little drawing of what they think it should look like? And then they...
Sometimes, yeah.
Do you like that? Do you rather that, or do you rather them not?
It can help. It depends what they're asking to do. If you know something's really not going to work as a logo, then you can I like to sort of present one exactly as they've asked, and then one that is kind of like they've asked that this one works, if we do it this way.
Yeah, I got you.
It's so much more effective for your brand. And, usually they'll follow your advice. Sometimes they're like, nope, that's what I want. At the end of the day, the customer's paying for it. So you can advise.
But, there's only so far. I know what you mean. There's only so far you can consult into the situation. And, that's the difficult part of being a consultant then, isn't it? Where you can only go so far. And you know that the best one is this one, but they're going for the other one, and they're paying for it. You have
to... At the end of the day, it's their decision. I mean, most people will take your advice on board. The way logo design works is we sort of mix and match the bits they do like, they don't like, or try iterations until it's, perfect for them, basically.
Definitely.
That's what I kind of say. We go until you love it.
Yeah, exactly.
You've got this... Hopefully forever.
Yeah, but isn't there a time frame, though, that you have to be careful with that? Because you can keep going and going and going, and months have gone by, and you're still just tuning this little corner here and a little line there. Is there, a time frame that you...
It can be. I mean, most... A lot of designers will say, right, you get two rounds of changes, and that's it. Or three rounds. And everything on top is, extra money. I don't like to do that if I can avoid it, because I think, especially in this climate, people like to know how much it's going to cost.
Yeah.
If you see how long is a piece of string.
Yeah.
How do they know if they've got budget for it, if it's going to just go on and on and on forever?
Is that how you would look at it, though, in a time frame? It takes me this long to do it, so this is how much the price would be? Or is it just, this is what you want doing, this is the fixed price?
Yeah, I try to quote per project a fixed price. Obviously, there's a fair usage. If they go through 10 billion iterations, then yeah, of course, we're going to have to start looking at...
It's very similar. Yeah, it's very similar in my world, because we just quote per project or per recruitment that we do. But then sometimes they can go on and on and on. And the problem with that then, I don't know if it's like that in yours, not so much for myself, but for definitely companies I work for, tension span drops very quickly. So as time goes on, less work is being done for that project.
You can just sit on it for ages and not get around to looking at it. And that's usually what can slow a project down.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
So if people like map out a time frame, like, you know, they want to see a first proof by this week and they're going to look at it this week and so on, that can help to move a project along. It just depends, you know, some people are really busy and they just don't have time to look at it for ages.
So logo design, with logo design, sorry, Emma, is that the same as signage design as well? Does that kind of fall into your genre as well?
I've done lots of signs, yeah. But that's not logo. So your logo, once you've got your logo and your brand and your colours, then you can roll that out to everything. Then you can start looking at your signs, signage, you know, leaflets, flyers, banners. It all gets rolled out.
Yeah.
And everything's consistent. It uses the same fonts, the same colours. You start to build up a brand picture. So I guess you could just have a sign with your logo on it.
Yeah, yeah. But it's building the portfolio, isn't it, of that kind of... So you obviously have a list of stuff that people probably want, and then you could just build your signage and leaflets, banners, wherever it needs to be. The bit I find extremely interesting is a lot of companies don't look at this as a whole process, do they? They just think, oh, I just need a logo. And then as time goes on, they oh shit!
You realise nothing matches.
Yeah, and they've just bits of this. And they, honestly, it happened to my website. I had to have a complete redesign of my website because it started looking patchy. There was no forward process.
Oh, in the website.
Yeah, but I mean, if you think of that as like a banner in a stall or something like that, or your front of your business, as a shop window or something, it becomes really important, doesn't it, to have some sort of uniform design to it then.
Well, you want people to be able to recognise you at the end of the day. You want them to see that bit of literature or that banner or sign and know it's your company straight away.
I see.
And especially with big stuff like roller banners and signs, you want to be able to attract someone from across the room.
Yes.
You want them to know straight away that that's your company.
That's the thing. A lot of this is for these events, isn't it? That's the conferences and stuff like that they go to. And this is where you need it. This is what attracts new customers to you. And
so less is more.
Really?
Don't ram your roller banner with every single thing that you do because people won't read it.
Oh, I've been there. And you can get these stands which look like stages. Have you seen them? And they've got lights everywhere and they just look. Do you know, they put me off, those
stand design. That's another area of design. Yeah, exhibition designers, that's the whole thing.
Yeah, exactly. They put me off. I don't know what. I like the guy that's got just enough and they look
just enough.
Just enough, and you go and you can go speak to them. But then you got some of them, then they've got this end plinth and there's this gigantic thing and you trip over the step going up onto it and they've got glass cases of the, and you're like, God, this is expensive. I'm not going to buy from you. It's like,
I haven't been to any for a while. I tend to avoid all the sales guys. But I used to do, you know, Bailey Caravans?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm
They do the NEC.
I've been to the NEC camp caravan and camping quite a few times.
Yeah, so have I. Because I used to check out all the stuff for the... Because I used to do all of the design requirement for them back when I was working in an agency.
And good work.
Yeah, stuff. So that thing that they do where they hang like a great big, it looks like a roller banner, but off of the caravan awning was like our idea. Like we came up with it 1 year, and then the following year they were all doing it.
Yeah, they're all doing it now.
Aren't they? Idea.
Yeah, do you when you think about it, whenever I've been to those shows, there is a lot of kind of graphic design, isn't there? There's tons of it to track.
It's people. All the signs, the banners, the brochures, everything.
It's quite extraordinary.
It was a huge amount of stuff, and they've got a big stand actually.
Yeah, they have. The one I went to
fit all the caravans in, right?
Well, this is it. The one I went to last year, they must have had a good 20-30% of one of the places in there, because there's like three rooms. They must have had a good chunk of it right in the middle.
Do they still have the boats as well? Because when I went, they had the boats as well in there. I can imagine how much that takes.
Not last year, no. And I don't... I think sometimes they do one kind of mid-year as well when they have the boats. But theirs is kind of... They've got these big, gigantic metal tube in, basically, with Bailey written on the top of it, and then you kind of walk through, like, looks like gates, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they've got all the, and they've got their
they've
own
got light boxes and stuff, yeah.
It's extraordinary, yeah. And it's a caravan.
Yeah. You know what I mean? That was the job, make caravans look sexy, you know?
Yep. And they got my favourite bit, and this is just the engineer in me, is where they got a cutaway of the material used, and they got a little stand with the different,
because it's got new like aluminium stuff or
whatever. Yeah, and it's got GRP, and it's got, I find that interesting.
Yeah, one of my little logos on the back of all the caravans, like.
Yeah. So you're
local, the most away going, oh, I did that.
Did you? Is that local updated, or was there a specific year where your logo was predominant, or is it the same logo to this day?
I think it's the same, like the little Alutech logo that says that new style of caravan is made out of this material. So I think that's probably.
Oh, well, I'm going to look out for that now.
No, you know, I'm not allowed out at the moment, am I? So
no, it's true.
Go out and have a look.
We'll have a look online. Look at it later. That's mental. Do clients come to you asking you your opinion about how to market this material, or is it just do this and I've got that sorted, or is that something you get into?
What, like how to get it out there?
Yeah, so leaflets and stuff like that. Do they come to you asking your opinion on what?
Occasionally, but I mean, I've got a couple of people I know in the sort of market that would be more like what a marketer does, like marketing companies. So I sort of have contacts with a few people in marketing. So
they come to you and
send them to the experts, to be honest. You know, different ways to launch campaigns. You know, I provide the materials to go with the campaign. And then the marketing expert would, you know, come up with the, you know, the way to launch the campaign.
Got you. So they don't need to know.
There's loads of different spheres. Like,
it's amazing. Yeah.
You've got copyright. If someone wants to really, you know, depends how much budget there is, really. But you can get a copywriter. So, you know, the words are really appealing and, you know, hitting all those emotion points to your customers.
This is what we used to do. Well, we still try to do it in recruitment, is try to use copywriting for adverts or do it ourselves and try to be a better copywriter ourselves. But it's an area that you kind of forget, don't you, when you're creating your brand and your message. You know, it's not just what's going on in your head, but how does it look and professionally sound to everyone else as well?
You can get too close to something, can't you? It always helps to have a fresh pair of eyes reading it.
Yeah.
You know,
that's it. But
they start sounding the same, don't they, after a while?
They ought to, yeah. Our client, don't get me started on that, Emma. Please don't get me started.
It's the one that lists your 20 days holiday as a perk.
That is not a perk. A pension is. This is that's the problem with job adverts. Nobody knows how to. Well, not. You have to sell it, but then you don't need to sell it. The right people will read it and see themselves in that job. And that's the idea of writing a job advert. You've got to be able to put that person in that job in their mind. And if you're going to be listing things like pension and 21 days holiday and you know, free parking, free parking can be a perk to some people. But you know what I mean? You're not putting people in that job, and talking about who you are in the first sentence is not putting people in that job. You want to attract, you know, you want to mentally kind of make people project themselves into it. Then tell
people. That's the same as what I do. That's exactly the same. So if you want to talk about features, if you're talking about features and not benefits, then that's it. So basically, it's like people don't care that you can build a really nice website for them. What they care is that website is going to attract customers to them and spend more money. Well, people don't care that an accountant's going to do all their books for them. What they care is that accountant can take all the hassle off of them and save them money, get them a tax rebate. So it's exactly the same thing. Like, they don't care. You know, you've got to talk about the customer rather than yourself.
But like you were saying, that when you were playing around with print when you were younger, it was, you know, headlines in newspapers is the attention getter. And that's what you need, don't you? You need to grab attention, sell the benefits, and then this is the kind of who we are and why we do it. You know what I mean? That's how you attract people. You know, benefits to some people and to other people, you know, is really doesn't differ, but what a benefit really should be is something to benefit someone for it. So that's Oh, I could rant about this for hours, by the way.
I'm actually so passionate about careers. I reckon I'd have been a careers advisor if I wasn't doing what I do, you know. I'm so passionate that anyone can just go and, like, even having a career change, like, whenever. Like, yeah, it's going to take a bit longer. You might need patience and tenacity, but, my God, you can do it.
It's not impossible. It's not impossible, and I've seen many CVs where people have literally diverted completely on sixpence to a different area of whatever it is, with very little skill and very little knowledge in that marketplace. What I always say to people, especially with changing careers, is really, what's your tolerance level? How much do you want to be earning in the next couple, well, how much can you afford to earn in the next couple of months to pay your bills? Because a lot of career change requires you to take a massive salary drop, and people don't realize that. So if you want to, it's a short time pain for a long time gain, is basically how
it works. But then you'd be doing something that you love.
But exactly. And some stuff, like I've said to someone quite recently, actually, how do I find a recession-proof job? And then they realize all the recession-proof jobs tend to be something which is service-based, like a nurse or, fireman or police and stuff like that. And they all require a level of training before that happens, or a degree or whatever it could be. And that's the problem for some of these guys. You're going to have to go back to college, or
You know what? Even after I did my degree in graphic design, every single entry job wanted 3 years experience. I tell you what, it's the people, it's not necessarily the most skilled and talented that I saw leave that course and get into the industry. It's the ones that didn't give up. It's the people, it's the tenacity,
it's the
drive.
That's the problem with today, though. We've a lot of jobs now are saying like needs 3 years experience, but really what they mean is they just need someone they can trust to do the job.
I don't know, you might have something different to say as a recruiter, but I think these job ads with their massive wish lists, that's just a wish list. They might not get every single thing on their wish list.
I'll tell you a little secret. Whenever someone gives me a wish list, I take the first biggest part of that job and I look for that. Everything else you can make do with, but that's the thing. So if you see something in the job that you know you can do, don't worry about the wish list, just apply for that job.
That's what I did to get my break. Yeah. That is literally what I did. And at the time I could only work 4 days a week because I was still actually at uni. And I just said, you know what, I'm going to apply anyway. What's the worst that can happen? They put it in the bin.
Yeah. Well, they just don't respond to you. That's the worst.
If you don't go for it, you will never know.
Yeah, and that's the thing with all different types of jobs and all different types of sectors and everything is, companies really want that guy hitting the ground. Oh God, I can't speak English today. Hitting the ground running.
Yeah.
And I could be honest with you, as a recruiter that's been in this game now for 15 years, there is no such person that can hit the ground running. It's various kind of skill sets and abilities that slightly fit that, but it's about kind of finding what you believe is right for this job and then going for it, basically, or hiring that person or you applying for that job. It's not an exact science. If anything, it is almost holistic recruitment and finding people and finding jobs. It's follow your thought process, basically, on it. Yeah, it's a strange one.
I just think people just give up too easily these days,
Yeah, tolerance level, isn't it? The people want it on the plate. And that's not just candidates wanting it. It's also companies wanting it. They want this person to do this and they want it now.
Yeah.
And they've done nothing to want.
Like an immediate world, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, that's the problem. This is the world we're living in, isn't it? It's that kind of, it's going to happen. It's going to happen now. Otherwise, it never happens.
In my life, honestly. Oh, yeah, I've got a big trade show coming up. When is it? Oh, 3 days' time. Brilliant. You've known about it all year.
That was a question I was going to ask you, actually, earlier, and I completely forgot to ask you. You're a freelancer. Why did you pick freelancing? What was the appeal to go on your own? And I'm a freelance recruiter, by the way. So
work-life balance. So I've done 10 years in agencies and publishing magazines.
Yeah.
Took a short career break to start a family. And then, like probably a lot of other new parents think, how are you going to juggle the childcare? So,
at the cost of childcare.
School hour jobs are like gold dust. Especially in this industry, it's all, you know, 9 to 5 or longer. So I just thought, you know what? I've got nothing to lose because at that point then I, you know, been staying at home for a couple of years. I've got the experience. Why the hell not? Let's give it a go. Let's see if I can start something. And just, you know, if I don't get clients, then I don't. And if I do, I'll grow it.
That's so it. Just,
yeah, you know?
And that's the thing about being a freelancer. It's people think you're doing less hours. You're actually doing more hours, but you're doing it around your life.
And that's God, you have to become the marketer, the salesperson, the finance person, you know, everything.
You have to learn a lot of things you didn't think you need to learn. It's
baptism of fire, networking, going out to, you know, get your face out there, meeting new people. You know,
that's the thing.
A career behind a screen, like hiding.
What the product that you've got, or the market stall you set out, is just the thing you're selling. Everything else behind that is 4 or 5, maybe 6 different jobs at the same time. And that a lot of people don't realize that about freelancing. Yeah.
There's a lot to learn initially if you want to be able to get out there and market yourself, and, you know, just get visible, really. Getting visible, like, absolutely, especially with social media. I mean, we're so lucky that we've got social media these days to advertise our businesses.
Otherwise, we'll all be cold calling every day, all day. It's just
if I had to cold call, I would get 0 customers. It's not me. You know?
I know in my sector, it's a predominant methodology of marketing, and I'm not a massive fan of it, if I'm honest with you. I don't think you need to be doing it as much. I think it's a tool as a part of a huge range of marketing things.
Exactly. You know, everything's a piece of the pie, isn't it? Like, lots of little things is what gets the results.
Exactly. And you know, like you say, with social media now, and especially with brand marketing, it's not just about a business brand. That's just someone you work for. It's like footballers. It's like, that's the team you play for, but you are known as the footballer, the guy scoring the goal at the end of the week, on the Saturday. So your name is known as well. If you take that name and put it in another business, that name still goes around. So that's, you know, your personal brand and then your company brand. And it's really important to kind of get those right as well as a perception on social media. But so there's another skill you got to learn, is that, you know, social media. Yeah. And that's why a lot of people fail at it. That's why a lot of people fail on social media.
Also, people want, like you said, immediate results. And social media is a long game. You've got to show up consistently every day to keep doing it. And people will remember you when they need service. They might not need service for 6 months.
But if you're
always at the forefront of their mind, they will.
But that's marketing theory in general. So you've got to be consistent and keep the flow of marketing going. So it's just like
when I worked in publishing and magazine ads, you know, if someone paid for one ad that went out on one occasion and then they'd phone up and complain it didn't work, well, it's not gonna. You have to advertise every single week for
it's
weeks.
It's capturing people.
Yeah. And then you stay in people's mind. And then when they do need that service, your brand's gonna come up. You know,
And then when this is, you know, I've done this on LinkedIn now for a fair few years now, and trying to keep myself at that point where if someone needs an engineering recruiter, they know who to speak to rather than look for it. So that's why I do what I do on social media. But also, you still got to be genuine behind that as well. So you can't make that shit up, basically.
No, I find that just being helpful is what, you know, anything that's going to be beneficial to your audience. So, you know, general hints and tips and, you know, inside secrets even, you know, just stuff that's useful.
Do you, with your marketing, have you ever tried using leaflets and stuff like that yourself? Do you do that, or, you know, proof of concept?
Well, I've had a stack of flyers sat on my desk for months that I've been intending to put through to all the indie businesses. Businesses would benefit from my services.
Well, you live in the trendy part of the world.
Do it all themselves.
Yeah.
I just haven't gone out and delivered them.
No,
I'm
not
much of a, like, it feels like cold calling, you know? Like, go in, introduce yourself, give them the leaflet. It's just another skill I need to.
With this lockdown hours walk, you can go to the nearest industrial estate and just drop those leaflets.
Oh, no. But I mean, leaflet drops don't get a huge return.
No, they don't. You're right.
I think it would be better to introduce in person, but it's, yeah, that's not going to happen for any time soon.
That's and I agree with that. No, I know. This is the problem with that kind of face to face. Now I was trying not to talk about kind of the world of business too much in my podcast lately, but we have to face it, don't we? That we have to rethink about how we present our business for the next couple of months. You know, we can't speak face to face. We have to capture people's attention a lot more. It's difficult. It's really difficult.
A lot of businesses have been pivoting though, haven't they?
They have. Changing
services.
They have. And there's a risk though. And it was on, I think it was BBC News the other day, or it might have been LBC actually. I listened to one of them on the radio whilst I'm chopping my finger off, whilst I'm trying to cook. But they were saying that it's great to pivot, but if this kind of small bubble recession that we're in moves very quickly back into June or something like that, we slowly start coming back to normality, and then July and August we come to some sort of normality. You might have pivoted too much one way and you miss out then on your old clientele. So there's pivoting, but then there's forking in the road at the same time, if that makes sense. You're going down the wrong direction. But I do think there's room for pivoting, and there's definitely room for continuing what you set yourself up to do, basically. But I find it very sad at the moment that the employed guys in our industries have all been let go at the moment. And I think that was a very short-sighted thought process, I think, which is...
It's fear, isn't it? I mean, no one knows how long this is going to go on for.
Well, what we've got, you know, in my lifetime, in your lifetime as well, we've had a recession before. We know what it looks like. We know what it feels like and how hard a recession is. And the only way through a recession is to continue doing what you do best. But, you know, you have to stop profit. You have to reduce the amount of outgoings. And sadly, the first people that go out the door the first thing you cut is people going out the door. So that's the sad thing about recessions, to be honest with you.
And people's marketing budgets, apparently.
Yeah, I never understood that, by the way. When this is, you know, I've read a few theories about this. You know, Nestle was quite a famous one in the Second World War. They're the ones that continue marketing with leaflets and posters and stuff like that.
Yeah, now they're huge.
And now look at the size. Yeah,
you should definitely. Now is the time to be marketing.
People keep saying this. What is it? Is it because people are just sitting around doing nothing, and the more they see?
Well, I mean, quite often the problem people have is they don't have time to sit there and think about their message and their marketing. So people have got time to do it. But also, now's the time to stay visible. You know, it's like we were just saying, the people that come to mind are the people you're going to use.
Yes.
If you just stop now and close everything down, you're just going to disappear.
Exactly. You're going to disappear for the next 3 months. And then you start back up when everyone else has been doing this three-month push of marketing. You're 20, 30 miles behind them all, aren't you, really?
You need to try and keep your pipeline going. You know, the people that are really, really busy and they don't market at all, that's those people tend to have like a boom and bust. You know, they're really, really busy and then they're really, really quiet, and then they're really, really busy again. Yeah, and they're really, really quiet. You've got to keep marketing the whole way around,
and they're the ones that make a lot of redundancies every few years, have you noticed? And they're up and down and up and down in their process.
It just needs to be a consistent thing.
Yeah,
I mean, you can scale it back and, you know, ramp it up a little bit, but you should never stop. You know, if you're ticking along nicely and you've got all the clients you need, then you might just have to do the minimum amount of marketing, but don't stop.
That's it. No, you're right. But this is a weird recession though, isn't it? Because everyone is affected. It's not, you know, it's not just like the construction industry, and it's not just, you know, certain, like the last recession was weird in its own sense, but it was all because the banking industry went weird and couldn't give people mortgages. So house buying was kicked in the teeth. This is strange. House buying's still happening. Banks have still got money. It's now us that don't have the money. and 'cause we can't earn it.
Yeah.
It's a weird, really strange one. Like you say, it's an unknown entity. It
feels like it could just bounce back straight away if it ended soon enough.
Well, some people think it's a V-shaped recession. Mm-hmm. I think it's more of it's going to drop and then come back up to a point and then slowly grow back up, if that makes sense. That's why.
Some of the jobs aren't going to be there anymore, are they? But
No.
Who knows? Depends how long this goes on for.
Well, I keep saying to people, just weather this storm, because when you come out the other end, the people who didn't have the patience to weather it are gone. So you lose a lot of competitors. So this is a great opportunity for people with businesses.
Things will go back to normal, or do you think a lot of businesses are going to keep people working from home to cut down on like office costs and stuff like this?
People are saying yes to that. I don't think so. I think there's going to be a small percentage which are going to adopt to it, but then there's still the old. You've got to remember, people don't change.
This is a
survival mode, and this is Simon Sinek talks about it in one of his books. I can't remember which one. Sorry, where there's two types of business: there's infinite and there's finite, and this is infinite. We're all in an infinite business, so we're all in survival mode now. We'll do what we need to do to survive, but then when things change, we then revert back to what we know really, really well. So some businesses will revert completely back to where they are. And I think that's the majority, by the way. I think we're going to have some minority that have adapted to it. But then we've got to remember the people which are working for these companies. Did they enjoy working at home with the kids screaming in the background? Whereas you and I, we're self-employed. So we created a world to work within where they were forced to work in this world. Some of them will create their world. Some of them will be able to manage it, and especially people that don't have kids and probably can deal with this, can work from home more often. I think the future after this will look very similar to what it did before, with a couple of exceptions. I don't think
I wonder if it'll make businesses a bit more flexible with regards to, you know, like mums that need to work around kids. More open to flexible working, like offering it as an option.
I'd be honest with you, it was starting to happen anyway, especially in the recruitment industry. A couple of my friends, especially female friends in the recruitment industry, were getting a lot of support because they were single mums, or they were just, you know, trying to cut down childcare, and they were getting to go home at 3 o'clock and then a couple of hours log on for a couple of hours in the night or arrange a couple of calls. There were very, very forward-thinking managers out there that are starting to work into this kind of world. Now, you can't do it with all the jobs. You know, if you're a delivery driver, you work at Asda and stuff like that, you can't do it with those jobs. But jobs like ours, where, you know, it's a laptop and a phone at the end of the day, there is a way, a methodology of doing it. And I think now proves concept that this is possible. This is a definite possibility. However, I think it also proves it's not a possibility at the same time, because a lot of managers will look at the figures now and go, well, bugger all happened in that time.
Yeah, but that's a skewed number, isn't it?
It's 100% a skewed number. Nobody knows. Nobody knows. But people will look at it and say, well, you didn't do your 30, 40 calls, or you didn't speak to 20, 40, you know, you didn't sell X, Y, and Z units or wherever it is. And it can be skewed towards them, but not realizing
we're in the risk.
Sorry, Em, what was that?
I think working from home is not for everyone as well, though, isn't it? I mean, you can't just wander off and put the telly on, you know? You've got to be a little bit...
No, it's not. It's not for everyone. And the hardest part I find from working from home is for me, it's switching off. So you come in 3 or 4 hours.
Always on the social media, always working, always marketing, always replying to an email or writing your next post.
When you're in an office, someone gets up at 12 o'clock to go for lunch, and sometimes that's a psychological marker. Oh shit, yeah, it's lunchtime now. And some people just get up and make a cup of coffee, or they'll go down the sandwich shop or something like that, but it gets them away from the screen. I've sat here with a full cup of coffee and started working, looked up, it's 3 o'clock, and I need to go pick up the little one, and I haven't drunk a sip of that coffee. You know what I mean? And it's honestly, and you don't realise you're doing it. And it's
being a condensed work day as well, like working around school.
Yes.
Those 5 hours are very short.
But how much do you get out of those 5 hours compared to when you were employed?
Loads.
Tons.
Because you have to.
Yeah. Although there are days where you can't sit there for 5 hours and do nothing. those days are not as much as they used to be for me. You get into a rhythm. You fill your days up with the stuff you should be doing, or the, even if it's one thing, you fill it up with that one thing.
Mind you, my last office job was incredibly productive because it was on the magazines, and those pictures are like factories. It is constant. I used to get 80 emails a day.
Wow.
On top of my day job. Yeah. So it was constant. It was like so busy, you know, you forget to eat.
Is that a famous magazine? Oh.
Is it what?
Was that a famous magazine? I didn't know you worked in a magazine.
Oh, yeah, I worked on, like, you know, like those local lifestyle magazines?
Oh, yeah.
Like Clifton Life, Bath Life.
Yeah, I know the ones, yeah.
But I worked on all the ads, you know, the guys that do the advertising in the back, putting together the ads for people that don't have, anything.
When I was living in Bristol, I used to know a couple of people who used to work for those magazines. And the sales side of it, and there's advertisement space to it.
They used to sit right behind me.
Did they? We'll talk about who it is, and it might be the same person. He said he loved selling it because it was cheap. People were just falling over each other to kind of get advertised in it, didn't they? It was quite an extraordinary. And then it turned out to be like a large book in the end of just adverts.
Oh my god! Yeah. Do you know what? Someone bought an ad once that was like an eighth of a page, which is business card size, pretty small.
Yeah.
And they gave me like two sides of A4 to fit on it. Like literally like two sides of A4 copy. And I was just like, that's not gonna, like, no one's gonna read it. And they're like, I don't care, I want all my services on the ad. As a gardener or something, like a handyman. And I was like, I'm gonna end up like 4 points. No one's gonna read it. You're gonna need a magnifying glass. So that's another example of, when you're trying to advise the client.
My dad...
Literally, just pick out your services and put that, because it's a tiny business card.
Yeah. And it works as well.
Yeah, you don't have reams and reams of text.
No, you don't. My dad retired from the Environment Agency, and he was first 6 months into his board over his head. So he goes and puts an advert in a newspaper, handyman wanted, and that was it, ? And his mobile number. He was inundated with calls. Honestly, I was like, oh my god, this is extraordinary. You had to be careful though, because he wasn't a set up as a business or a sole trader, so he just did some of these jobs. Some of them were cash in hand, and some of them were for free, because there was a lot of elderly. He felt so sorry for some of them as well, because there was jobs that one house, there was jobs mounted right up, but just that one simple line. And he's not a graphic designer, he's not a marketer.
It stood out, right? Because less is more.
Less is more, and it bloody worked. And he had to, he put it in there for, I think it cost him like 50 quid putting it in there for 2 weeks, and in the end, he took it out. Yeah, and even to this day, it's like, what are we now? 5, 6, maybe 10 years on now. About 8 years on, and he still has people calling him. He just didn't have 2 weeks.
It's not dead.
Yeah, I don't think it is. And I'm really, I miss the job section in the local newspaper, and I miss, for some reason, the estate agents don't put as many houses as well in the local paper as well. And I miss all that. But I think newspapers are dying, which to certain generations, it's gone. No one buys a newspaper in certain generations. So it's a strange one, isn't it?
I've just started getting the newspaper again now that we're all in lockdown. It's quite nice to spend the day just,
In the sun, reading the newspaper. So a lot of people know this about you, Emma. You live in Weston-super-Mare, which is like the best place to be right now in lockdown, isn't it? It's not, is it?
You're being ironical now.
I'm being ironical. It's horrible, isn't it? You can't go to the beach. What the hell?
A lot of people don't seem to like Weston, but I've always loved it. No, why did you go back to Weston?
I love it.
There's a lot to like about Weston. It's amazing.
I
live right on the seafront. It's brilliant.
The funny thing is, everyone here in the Midlands, they flock to Weston because it's really the closest beach to us.
Well, my mum was from Birmingham originally.
Oh, yeah, she is, isn't she? Yeah, I remember that. What's it like on the seaside right now in lockdown? What's it like down there when you go out for your little walks?
I've been trying to avoid the actual seafront. I've been walking just around like the local sort of houses, but there's still a fair few people. Like, we've got like a cycle path that goes right along the promenade, so there's lots of cyclists out, lots of runners. So you've got to be careful, because too many people do that. It's, you know, you can't keep your social distancing, you know?
It's weird. It's, round here, it's quite quiet. There's a lot of elderly. I live in kind of the posh end of Tamworth, if that's a thing. Yeah. <It's>, just my street, I'm the youngest. I'm 41. I'm the youngest in my street. Everyone's retired.
My last house was like that. It's brilliant. Everyone's so quiet.
It's beautiful. And they got amazing gardens. I'm not a gardener. Yeah. I've spent the last 2 weeks just hoeing the garden to get rid of weeds, thinking that's a good job. I've done a good job. They've done nothing else, just hoeing this garden. And I've not seen anyone for years come out of their house. Some people, you get a wave while you're putting the bin out and stuff like that. But since this lockdown, every single one of them has been out and about every day. It's extraordinary. Absolutely extraordinary. Yeah. And you're walking down the road, you have to cross the road to get away from people. Zig and zagging down the road. It takes three times longer to get somewhere because the amount of elderly walking down the road is honestly, this is mad. Absolute mad. But say again, sorry.
Crazy times.
Oh, it's nuts. Absolute nuts. Absolute nuts. So I always try to end my podcast in asking someone about their business future and where they want to go and where they want to take it. Obviously, we're in crazy times. Is there kind of something you in your mind that you want to try to go towards with your business, or are you just trying to just keep it together? It's up to you. It's really up to you how you want to do it.
I think everyone's trying to keep it together right now, aren't they?
Yeah, I know. I am. I'm just trying to do what I know. That's all I'm doing.
I mean, I guess I just want to carry on doing what I love the most, which is print design.
There's still a future for it. I know there's still a future for what you...
You know, I don't want to pivot towards stuff like web, digital, particularly because it's not where my passion lies, you know?
Yeah. You need to do what you love. And that's why I've always said to people, whenever you start a business, do what you enjoy. And then the money side of it, you know, it'll come. It'll come in the end anyway. That's why a lot of people push and pull, don't they, with that? And then they think, they hear people saying, pivot or do something different. And then they go and do it and then regret it. And then it's that long road back.
I think, like, we were speaking in the week and... I've started putting together like this an ebook, you know, as an extra thing to do, you know, alongside my main business.
Yeah.
But I'm not gonna drastically pivot away from, core offering.
I was gonna say that a lot of your sector, because I got a friend that does events recruitment, and his sector's dead. So your sector is very similar to that, isn't it? You sit in this marketplace, and it's going to turn around. People are going back to events soon. You know, Bailey Caravans need to sell caravans. It's going to be plenty of exhibitions. Exactly.
But I mean, the extra offering that I'm doing, it isn't a million miles away from my day job anyway. You know, it's literally just about staying visible on LinkedIn, and you know. I've been all over LinkedIn in the last year, and it's worked for me. It's, you know, I've got clients from LinkedIn.
Brilliant.
People said, how have you done that? So I've just basically documented my process. And if I can help other businesses by selling that as well, then great.
You know, good
it's
idea.
Just another thing to offer, isn't it?
Oh, this is... Exactly. And this is why I do these podcasts. It's just another thing for people to kind of engage with other people and hear what other people's thoughts are and stuff. Because otherwise, if it's just you, it's quite boring over time. I'm not saying it like that. No, I just think that sometimes we just, you've got to add to it, and you've got to show people a little bit more than just, this is what I do. But, you know, this is what I do, and this is my personality, and this is why I do it. And you create a story for yourself, basically.
Exactly. As far as I'm concerned, it's all in the marketing sphere. It's all about, you know, whether it's posting on LinkedIn or getting your flyers and your marketing out, it's still being visible.
I agree.
Keep visible, guys.
Yeah. And there's the lesson for today. Be visible.
Keep visible.
Yeah. Thank you, Em. Thank you for coming on my podcast. I know it took a couple of weeks, a couple of months, a couple of years.
We got there in the end.
We're here now. It's cool. It took a whole lockdown of the country and a virus to do it. But we're here.
And you know what? It was fine.
Good. I'm glad. And it was your first podcast. No one would know.
You might have started a trend now.
I try not to.
Rude.
Take it easy. Speak to you soon.
Cheers, Mark.
Bye. Really hope you enjoyed that. And if you're looking for someone in the print graphic design, definitely reach out to Emma. I've put her LinkedIn profile in the information of this podcast. And that's it for me this week. I hope you're staying safe, and I look forward to speaking to you soon. Take it easy. Bye-bye.